It's a beautiful morning.
Certainly know what that theme song means by now. That's right. It's another episode of Health Matters, brought to you by Forsyth Cancer Care Center. That's right. Brought to you by Forsyth Cancer Care Center. They're located here in Reno, Nevada at 521 Hamel Lane, right off of McCarran. And if you'd like to call them, and I want you to write this phone number down. It's very important, especially if you have a family member, friend, or associate who's been diagnosed with cancer, or you have other medical conditions that need the help of the Forsyth Cancer Care Center. You can call them at 775-827-0707. Again, 775-827-0707. Health Matters. Today we're going to be talking about this ongoing study that's the most amazing study when it comes to cancer, and it's done right there at the Forsyth Cancer Care Center. And then we're going to be talking about some ovarian cancer as well. So stay tuned to Forsyth Cancer Care Center's Health Matters right now. Let's go without further ado to not just the host and creator, Dr. Forsyth, but the lady who is the host and makes it all happen right after her show, Grace Erlene Forsyth.
Yeah, thank you, Eddie.
Thank you, Eddie, yeah, for that great intro.
Yes, and we are going to talk about Dr. Forsyth's survivorship study.
Amen.
And it's been going on for 10 years.
Wow.
And so we're going to do, with all stage 4 cancers, and that's adult cancers. It's not pediatrics.
Right.
Because Dr. Forsyth is an adult oncologist.
Right.
Not a pediatrician. So I sort of like that better, because that's pretty hard to do, is take care of all those poor sick little babies.
Oh, it is terrible.
And put them on that chemo, and it's really hard for them to survive.
It is.
All those treatments.
Yes, so, and kudos to the pediatric oncologist, because it takes a special person to deal with that day in and day out.
I don't know how they do it.
I don't either.
And I don't know how you do it, Dr. Forsyth, because your practice it is uplifting, because you see your results.
Many of my colleagues have burned out or retired early. One is even living in Hawaii on Kona now. So, I certainly do have a little jealousy over that. But I'm the kind of guy that's going to die with my shoes on. I don't think I'll ever retire, and I don't think you'll let me, Erlene.
That's not true.
That's not true.
I just want the audience to know that is so not true.
That is so not true.
If she had told them to retire years ago.
Many years ago. As a matter of fact, Doctor, that ranch was not created for you to go to work from. That ranch was created for you to retire in. And we all look forward to that day, and I mean that as a friend. But I will tell you this. I do want to thank you, and I thank God that you're still helping people at Forsyth Cancer Care Center.
Well, thank you, Eddie, and you know all my secrets, so I can't get away with anything.
That's right.
My gosh. Okay, we have a question. Please tell us what your recent report to the Osteopathic Annual Conference meeting in medical excellence, and what you will accomplish for the future treatments of your stage 4 cancer patients.
Well, thank you, Erlene. The excellent question. So, the whole goal in doing survival studies is to see that if a newer, out-of-the-box, if you will, therapy has a greater survival statistic than one produced by conventional oncology, and has been in their own literature in the very famous oncology journal, the Clinical Journal of Oncology, in 2004. Where they reviewed a 5-year survival rate of stage 4 patients, and a parallel study done in Australia did the same type of study, and their statistics were very comparable early. But my goal is to beat what they boast about as a 2.1 and 2.3 survival rate. That means 2 out of 100 in both United States and Australia, using the same kind of drugs for the same kinds of patients of all adult cancers, and yet only after 5 years, having patients survive only 2 out of 100. It's not a good batting average. And I think if you were a batting manager, Eddie, you would think twice about hiring a batter with that kind of poor batting average. So it was a dismal result. You might get a bat boy to fit in that category, but not a good hitter. Come on, Amen. Let's face it. So right. We wanted something better, and our current stage for study after 10 years, 2,000 patients, lower numbers than were in these earlier studies, and the earlier studies were retrospective, and my study is prospective. That simply means I didn't have 2,000 patients at the doorstep the day I started the study. So it's prospective, meaning you accumulate and achieve patients to go into the study every day, every week, every month, every year, until you reach the 2,000 mark, which I did in 10 years.
Wow. That's fascinating.
It is very fascinating. And the amazing results that you have secured with that study, I mean, there's no reason on earth that people around the world would not be lining up right now, because Forsyth Cancer Care Center truly is the answer to cancer.
Thank you. Listen, this question relates to that. They want to know how hard it is to continually follow up upon patients who may move around once, twice, or move during this time span, and if they die from other causes, like old age disease, cardiovascular disease, myocardial infarction, and myocardial accidents, falls, and still, do you count them as a cancer death?
Yes, and that I think that question meant motor vehicle accidents, because certainly many people die in accidents. We've had many in our own family who have succumbed to that. But yes, it is extremely hard. But what it does to our statistics, if they do die of any of those old age diseases you mentioned, or accidents or falls, they're still counted as a cancer death. Because, as both of you know, when a person gets a diagnosis of stage 4 cancer, it is tantamount to a death sentence. And we've said that before, and I will say it again. Just because stage 4 cancer patients do die if they don't receive the appropriate treatment. And that's what we're measuring. Are they alive or dead after a certain period of time? And our results will tell the story.
Yes, and if you cannot reach the patient or their family, what other means are there to know if death has occurred?
Yes, another excellent question. And we do constantly phone patients, try and bring them back. If they don't answer their phone or their email is not working, that is usually a telltale sign, Erlene, that they probably are not there, and they most likely have died and not given us a follow-up. Because most of the patients who are living do contact us, thank you notes, certain presents at times, or they want to come and either see me in person or do a Zoom contact. And so, and in addition to that, we do have a national obituary that is operative, that gives us a clue as to who has died and who hasn't. And when they do die, most of them die in their home state where they came from, but there's many that move around at the end, or maybe they go live with their children or grandchildren. Many go to nursing homes or extended care facilities where no one knows where they are, and they often don't have phones in those places, so they can't be contacted. So they become kind of an anonymous entity. So it is very tough. So we do all those deaths go against our statistics and make them look worse than they are.
That's an exhausting way to keep track of
people. Amazing.
And the whole point is here, folks, and to our audience, most oncologists do not follow up on their patients. I've had more patients come and see me on a fresh first visit and say, I didn't like him or her because they had no statistics to quote to me. On the contrary, when they see me, I can give them all the statistics they want.
Wow. unbelievable.
Well, thank God you're a dedicated oncologist, Dr. Forsythe.
Well, thank you very much. I'm not trying to be pat myself on the back at all, but it is true.
Well, we didn't say that.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you don't need to pat yourself on the back. Let me tell the viewers and listeners, since we're now heard on so many other radio and television stations, that I walked in to Forsythe Cancer Care Center one time, and a friend of yours and mine asked me to join him and three ladies. They were holding hands and praying. So I thought for sure by joining them, I was going to hear, "Dear Lord, please protect me, please save me from cancer." Not at all. You know what I heard, Dr. Forsythe? I heard them all thanking you for being you and having the Forsythe Cancer Care Center, along with Earlene, Valerie, and the rest of the crew there. And that is what sold me on the fact that you truly are the answer to cancer.
Oh, thank you, Eddie.
And the answer
thank
to
you.
Prayer. Mm-hmm.
And we have an additional thing. We are now playing Earlene's music, Imagine Heaven, for its healing powers. And that song does something to people. They all verify this, that it stirs up their endorphins and their energy level, and it really is a healing effect. The music of healing is what it is.
Wow.
Okay, we have another question. And what does your Forsythe immune protocol consist of?
Very good question. It's a comprehensive question, because as an integrative oncologist, that means I'm using the best of East and West medicine, the best of conventional and alternative medicine to achieve the most amazing results. And they are historical results, because let's face it, if the government wanted to take on my protocols, they would probably be saving about 90% of the cost of by using alternative medicine over conventional medicine, because we're only using 10% doses of the one factor in our treatments, the cost of medicine, which will cost only 10% of its present cost, which is making oncology right now the most expensive subspecialty of medicine, even greater than ICU medicine, pulmonary medicine, cardiac medicine, all right, any of those. So think of that, folks, how much it would lower the budget, literally by billions of dollars. So for that reason, and that reason alone, I am happy to be involved in trying to change the system in a favorable way, because also the end result is that the patients come out happy with more quality of life and longer longevity, for sure, as our statistics prove, and none of those long-term adversities like hair loss, chemo, brain, neuropathies, cytopenias, damage to the heart, liver, kidneys, and all of those things, and even, unfortunately, death from conventional treatments, whereas we have had, knock on wood, no deaths in our 2,000 patient study attributable to our chemotherapy.
Wow.
Yes, because we have to really rejoice that God has given us a beautiful, wonderful body.
Amen.
That can fight off, you know, all different things, and they don't need 100% of those poisonous drugs.
And Arlene, I probably got away from the question, but let me answer it this way. 95% of my patients who come to me have already had a surgical biopsy. They have had either a needle biopsy, a bone marrow biopsy, a lumpectomy of something, or a liver lung biopsy, anywhere there was a mass. And the other 5% will require probably a liquid biopsy, which is a way of finding malignant cells without using a needle or any invasive procedure. And the one that is most telling to most men who have a large prostate and a high PSA is when they get that long needle and stick it in through the rectum into your prostate, not once, but 10 to 15 times, until they feel they have capture the malignant cells in the prostate. And most men would rather have dental extractions to the maximum rather than have that done. So that is that. When we get the blood back from the genetics lab, they say on the first paragraph, malignant cells are present and they have been isolated. So we know that this is tantamount to a surgical biopsy, and you get even more information than you ever get from a needle biopsy or a lumpectomy. And we also look at the staging. The staging is when you want to find out, has the tumor gone somewhere else in the body? And that includes CT scans, bone scans, PET scans, ultrasounds, endoscopy reports, and the pathology refer that comes from that refers to a diagnosis with the grade of the tumor. The grading of the tumor is what the pathologist sees under the microscope, like the Gleason score in prostate cancer, which is graded 1 to 10, depending on the differentiation or the degree of malignancy of the cancer itself. And the pathologist usually will rate this as well-differentiated cancer, moderately well-differentiated, poorly differentiated, or anaplastic, which is the most aggressive type of cancer ever, just based on the look of the cells under the microscope.
Yes, and you know, on the internet, I found they have an International Society of Liquid Biopsy.
Oh, wonderful.
And that was started in 2017, and it originated in Germany. So it has conferences twice a year, and it goes over all the things that you probably should be studying and look at on how it can help, you know, take
Excellent.
Care of a tumor.
And you know what, folks? It's unfortunate, but even our boards don't really know what liquid biopsies are, and they criticize doctors for using them. They just are not up to par on the science.
Well, I encourage the medical board to become a member of the International Society of Liquid Biopsy.
Because
you can, you pay $40 and you're a member and you get updated information from them.
Wow. Oh, boy.
Yeah. Okay. What information is given to you in the completed RGCC report or the Greek report?
What information is given to you?
That's, I think, question five.
All right. Well, let's see what information. Let me go see if we missed anything, Earlene. I think that is.
It's on page three.
All right. Well, let me go and see what kind of reports. The reports, first paragraph, as I said, will say it's a 24-page report, incidentally. And there's a lot of it is in the weeds for the average person. Even many doctors cannot understand all of the science behind it. But it's highly scientific. And it goes into genes like you've never gone into genes before. And Eddie, you've been in lots of genes, so I know. Excuse me, Eddie.
Stop it.
We better end that one.
His wife is listening, okay?
Sorry, Shari, I didn't mean to. So it also, it will give you what is, the report is going to give you what are the best chemo agents, and there's 70 that are tested, what are the best newer targeted agents or monoclonal antibodies and small molecular weight and therapies. It's going to give you what are the best supplements. I mean, every type of supplement you can think of. There's over 80 that are counted. Some are herbals, some are vitamins, some are minerals, some are algae products, some are just plain chemicals that have a basis. In fact, some are big pharma agents that also treat cancer. So we may have to write scripts for some of them. And also, and one of the main things it gives you is a circulating tumor cell count, sometimes called a circulating stem cell count, because they are equivalent. And these are, I analyze it to patients like this. Take a big oak tree that's dropping acorns into a stream beneath it. The acorns are floating around in the stream, meandering through the landscape until they find fertile soil and plant themselves on the stream, and woo, in next spring, a oak tree starts coming up That's exactly what happens when in the body our cancer mass drops cells, circulating tumor cells, our stem cells, into the bloodstream, lymphatics, or venous blood, and these circulate around, and like the 1,000-pound gorilla, they do what they want. They can go where they want. They have complete power to implant themselves wherever they find fertile soil. And it's mostly in the liver, the bones, the lungs, or soft tissues.
So you said it was a 24-page report. Yeah, they are pretty thick. And you go through that every time you get a new protocol or make up a new protocol for each patient. And when you go through this 24-page report, it also gives you other important facts that the patient has not yet received. Can you review that?
Yeah, I kind of covered it a little bit. Let's go over it again. It's so important. And the first thing I hear out of the patient's mouth, once they receive the report, as I do, so we're both looking at the same report, I'm going to condense that 24 pages into a one-page protocol. And the first thing they're going to tell me, it's all Greek to me, doctor. I don't understand it. So I do my best to go over it. So we look at it, all the agents, and there's more than 70 usually, and they're in different groups depending on how they attack the cancer, because not all chemo agents hit the cancer in the same way. Some kill the cancer while it's resting, some kill it while it's dividing, some kill it by the mother cancer cell is dividing into two and has a violin-like fibers between them, the fibers that separate the two daughters together apart from one another. So some attack different parts of the metabolism or the DNA molecule or metabolically active against the cancer. So the newer agents that have been only around for 20, 30 years are called the MOABs, which is monoclonal antibodies. And all of these agents usually end in MAB, MAB, monoclonal antibody. That's easy.
Oh, yeah. We remember this from the COVID.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the others, the small molecule agents, end in IBS.
All right. IBs. This is Health Matters, brought to you by Forsyth Cancer Care Center, 521 Hamel Lane, phone number 775-827-0707, and we will be right back.
Have you, a friend, or family member been diagnosed with cancer? Dr. Forsyth at the Forsyth Cancer Care Center offers an all-inclusive program to treat adult types of cancer. The Forsyth Immune Protocol Cancer Treatment Plan, in a current prospective study of over 6.5 years and 1,200 adult cancer patients, has produced a remarkable 30 times greater survival statistic when compared to conventional full-dose chemotherapy. Greater than 95% of all their patients choose low-dose insulin-potentiated life chemotherapy, using only 10 to 15% chemotherapy dosing with insulin. Dr. Forsyth has long been considered one of the most respected physicians in the United States, particularly for his treatment of cancer and the legal use of human growth hormone. Located in Reno, Nevada, Dr. Forsyth has seen patients from all over the world. To schedule your consultation today, call 775-827-0707. That number again is 775-827-0707.
Charbecue the Butcher's Kitchen would like to thank every customer for your loyalty and continued support through these challenging times. Call for takeout and delivery of rib tips, brisket, ahi tuna, roasted veggies, and much more. Charbecue's open from 11 to 7, Monday through Saturday, and delivers hot food safe and healthy. Call 499-5855 for details. 499-5855 Charbecue, as featured on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Get real. Get into Charbecue Reno.
At A Proper Fit Footwear in the Reno Town Mall, we've been accomplishing happy feet for over 30 years.
We offer a various range of shoe styles and sizes for both men and women. From all-season shoes and orthotics to work boots and safety shoes, our professional and reliable staff possesses the knowledge to help you find the proper shoes to fit your needs. Hard to fit? Hard to find?
A Proper Fit Footwear is here to give our customers happy feet. We make people aware of potential foot problems as we're sizing their feet. suggesting the right arch support and guiding them to the proper shoes for their needs.
Stop by A Proper Fit Footwear at 4001 South Virginia Street in the Reno Town Mall today and allow the owner Mike Jones and our fabulous staff to find the perfect pair of shoes tailored to your specific needs.
A Proper Fit Footwear in the Reno Town Mall, the home of Happy Feet, where comfort and your feet meet.
Destination Midtown. Experience the difference. Reno's premier shopping extravaganza. Everything imaginable and more. Midtown matters. Get down to Midtown.
Beefy's, the best little diner in the biggest little city. Cheeseburgers extraordinaire, chili cheese omelets, and the best milkshakes in Midtown and Reno. Beefy's. Try the full Beefy's menu and beer on tap. Beefy's, South Virginia at Arroyo.
Midtown Reno. Experience the difference. Get down to Midtown. Midtown matters.
All right, we're back now with the second half of Health Matters, a show that's going to help you with any and all of your medical situations by calling Forsyth Cancer Care Center. They're located at 521 Hamel Lane right here in Northern Nevada, right here in Reno. You give them a call and write this phone number down for any friends, family members, or associates that you may know that have been diagnosed with cancer. That phone number is area code 775-827-0707. Write it down and give them a call. It is 775-827-0707. I want to thank Scott, Cheryl. I want to thank none other than Sarah, Johnny in Gilbert, Arizona, and also Rebecca in Mayport, Florida, for all chiming in to Health Matters today. So without further ado, now let's go back to the host of Health Matters, Erlene Forsyth.
Thank you, Eddie. Now, you were talking about this 24-page report before the break.
Yes.
And did you want to still go over that? Because I know we got cut off.
No, I think we covered pretty good. Thank you, though.
Oh, yeah. Hey, no problem. So we are on... Oh, is my mic not back?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, hey, I can hear myself.
You can hear yourself now, right?
I'm here. Do you take all your protocols from your patients' genes on that report on the RGCC?
Yes. In essence, I think the question refers to the fact that I'm not guessing as an oncologist as I would be in the conventional arena. I'm not guessing at any treatments I'm giving the patient. And most of oncology, and please don't be offended by my colleagues in the conventional field, because that's what we did before, and that's what they are mostly doing now, because most oncologists are not taking their orders from the patient's own genes. The patient's genes are the blueprint for a correct and precise protocol. So I can look a patient straight in the eye and say, I do know what I'm doing here. I have faith in these because these are the best actors for treating your cancer. They have the highest kill ratios, the highest efficacy. I refuse to use Betty Crocker medicine, where you take a book off the shelf and it has a menu and you don't deviate 1 teaspoon or 1 ounce from the said menu. And I don't do one-size-fits-all medicine. That when you do a genetically-based medicine, you are using only what the patient's own genes, and these are unique to that patient. No two patients, even with the same tumor, even if they're the same age and sex, they're not going to be the same. They have different profiles because everyone's genes are unique to them. Only a twin of yours, an identical twin, would have the same type of profile, perhaps.
Oh, you think?
It's possible. I've never had that experience, but I assume it is because their genes are pretty similar in every way.
I thought they veered off a little bit, but who knows?
Well, they might. Most of the time, they don't.
You haven't had any identical twins, have you?
They don't. No, I haven't. And, of course, most twins do not die of the same thing, so there are differences, we know, but many of those are from environmental factors. So the best markers are used for determining the success of each IPT, or insulin potentiated therapy, and we're able to also evaluate the technique of the supportive oligonucleotide technique, which is a special treatment offered by only the Greek lab that we use, the RGCC, or Research Genetic Cancer Center lab, that uses stem cells to make, similar to a vaccine, made on an RNA messenger platform to treat all forms of adult cancers. So, go figure.
I don't know, go figure.
And I have the privilege, as the only doctor in Nevada to be using this technique at this time.
Wow.
How about the United States?
No, there are others in the United States. I have waited a few years to check it out and make sure there were any bad reactions from this treatment, and there have been none that I know of.
Okay. In the United States, I'm sorry, why did you choose the Greek lab over any other genomic lab in the United States or from any other country?
Well, first of all, in the United States, we are behind this. We have to admit it and hone up to it. But we do the United States genetics labs do not look at alternative supplements like vitamins, minerals, herbs, algae, mushrooms, etc. They have nothing to do with that, as they have nothing to do with dietary recommendations. So they're not that helpful for any oncologist, I don't think. And in other countries, we have tried the other two best ones in the world, the Good Gene, G-E-N-E lab from South Korea. That did not meet our expectations. We moved to Germany. The BioFocus lab is good, but not as good as where we ended up in Greece. And Greeks beat them all, and that's why they have the Acropolis there, because they are the best.
Wow.
And remember, they did invent the Olympics, too.
Yeah, so the Greeks.
I'm hung up on them, so my motto is, take it to the Greeks.
Okay, like in Italy, it's like, take it to the mattress.
That's right.
Oh, Elaine.
All right, I love it.
You're going low, baby.
No, that just means they fight it out, doesn't it?
That's right.
All right.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. I think we fight it out more than the Italians.
All right, let's not get personal.
Oh, what? Why not?
Okay.
Okay. Now, how high does the percent kill ratio go for each component of your treatment protocol?
That's a very insightful, interesting question, because every item that comes up on the Greek test, that would be every single chemotherapy, every single targeted monoclonal therapy, small molecule therapy, has a number by it. That's its kill ratio. That means how effective it is. What I'm saying here is, if you had 100 colonies of your cancer on a plate and you added this or that chemical or whatever supplement, it would, on the plate in a few days, it would kill what it kills inherently, has the potential to kill in a percentage. That percentage could be zero. It doesn't kill any, or it could go as high as 83%. That's as high as we ever get. That is the top rung of the ladder for efficacy, and that's what I mean by percent kill ratio.
Wow.
Now, the biggest givers or effective ones in our study are the different groups of chemotherapy agents that come up, and they are the ones that can reach as high as 83% activity. So they are, we call them the big guns. Now the smaller guns, the rifles, the mortars, the machine guns, everything under that are not the big guns. They're not the cannons and the howitzers. So the kill ratio is higher in chemo, and then it's not as high as in targets or MOABs. They only go up maybe to 30 or 40% activity. And the supplements, likewise, 30 or 40 is very high for them. So the big guns are what we want first, but we do use the supplements because there may be 20 of them, so all 20 are hitting the cancer at different points take the team that went after Osama bin Laden. They not only had the big guns, the helicopter gunships, but all of the team was carrying stun guns and 45 pistols and machine guns and all their rifles and even grenades. And if they all failed, guess what was out there? The real big gun was the cruise missile that was going to kill them all if they weren't successful. So it was it was a suicide mission, folks. Don't ever kid yourself. Those guys were, it was do or die for them for that problem. And also our blockers, our estrogen testosterone blockers and HER2 blockers rarely go higher than 10-20%. They're not big actors, but they do participate in the game.
Yeah, they do, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Yes. Okay. What was the calculus calculated by the University of Virginia in evaluating efficacy of your protocols using the best two drugs and the best supplements? And number one, I never took calculus.
Yeah, a good question. I think that I'll have to correct you on that. It was the University of Utah.
Oh, Utah?
Utah. I don't know where Virginia came from, but thanks
why
for that.
Why did I think of Virginia?
Well, Utah is closer to us, so this this is a true fact. The husband of a patient of mine who's being treated for her breast cancer, and I knew that he was a professor in charge of mathematics at University of Utah, and I said, listen, I'm a doctor. I'm not a mathematician. I do not know how to figure out the calculus for what I'm doing and how effective it is. Can you help me? And he took it to his department, and they studied it, because you're using two big guns that have different percentages of active. Then you're using 20 supplements that all have different percentages of their kill ratio. So how do you figure that out? Well, his department did. They said, I should be hitting 95% or greater chance of putting that patient with any cancer and with my protocol into a 95% or greater chance of achieving a complete remission.
How do you calculate that?
How did he? I told you, honey. I'm not
calculus.
I'm not a mathematician. That's why I gave it to him.
Okay. From the supplement genetic testing, what are the top 10 agents that come up most of the time?
These are things that come up almost on every supplement list as mostly effective and most highest in percentage of activity. So we have vitamin C that you would expect, artemisia in different forms. It comes in the form of artisan, artesanate, and artemisinin. And then vitamin B17, also known as laetril, nitrilocyanin, and amygdalin. It, as you know, comes from apricot pits, cherry pits, peach pits, lentils, and almonds. And then there's quercetin, a bioflavonoid. It's used for allergies and even COVID. Curcumin or turmeric, every woman has that in her spice cabinet, I assume. But it can be given IV. It can be put on salads or foods. It's very good. It's used in
Well, we put it on eggs.
We put it on
everything that we eat.
And in third world countries, especially India and Southeast Asia, they use it for cancer all the time. And then vitamin D3, as you know, very good for COVID, also good for all cancers, and we like it in the high range. So that means 5 to 10,000 IUs a day on a regular basis. Coenzyme Q10, known for its efficacy in heart disease, congestive heart failure, coronary disease, and so on. It is often comes up. Angiostop, also called it has also called black mud or compound X. It has bloodroot in it. That's an herb that is very effective in skin cancers. And then there's one I personally worked on 20 years ago, pawpaw from the pawpaw tree. That's P-A-W-P-A-W. Causes cancer cells to go into death spiral or apoptosis. So all of those are helpful to us and useful. And okay. Those are the ones that come up most often.
That's why you feed me apricot pits?
Well, you do have to be careful there, so I'm very careful because if I give you too much, cyanide poisoning may ensue.
Well, that's what I mean.
I don't want to give any unhappy husbands any hints on.
I'm feeling faint right now, Jim. You gave me so much this morning.
I'll be arrested any moment now.
Any minute. They'll be busting in the Reno Town Mall right now. Believe me. I love it. By the way, that answers one of the questions that came in from Stan. Stan's in Salt Lake City, Utah, and he's a longtime listener. And Stan writes in and said, you didn't mention apricots, but I understand that apricots played a major role down in Mexico, question mark. He's really asking a question. I guess there was a time when people would go to Mexico for the what was it called?
Leitrim. Okay. Or B-17, right. Yes.
But anyway, Stan, thanks for listening,
yeah.
too.
Thank you, Stan.
Yeah, you better believe it. Thanks for listening. And by the way, we also have Jim Webster, who said, great show. Can't wait to go to Forsyth Cancer Care Center. Jim, thanks for listening to Health Matters.
Thank you, Jim.
Okay, now at the 10-year mark for your 2000 stage 4 patients, how do your results compare with a publicized report in the Clinical Journal of Oncology in 2004?
Yeah, we did report on this somewhat earlier, but I was happy to repeat it. Our 2000 patient study that started in March of 2012 and ended this last month, March of 2022, that is 10 years by my calculations. And in their calculations in Australia and the United States, they hit only 2.1 and 2.3% in U.S. and Australian studies of the same survival type studies. Only theirs was retrospective, and as a single doctor clinic at most of the time, and with two other very helpful assistants, I might add. Our study yielded 68% survival, almost 30 or more than 30 times greater than their study. And we went 10 years instead of 5, so I'm giving the patients 5 more years. They're afraid to do a 10-year study because there won't be any patients left to do it on.
Wow.
Hate to say that, guys, but please catch up. You know how to do it now. I'm not going to tell you anymore. Get on the train and let's go.
Now, who are you talking about? Who knows how to do it?
My colleagues.
Oh.
Right.
Okay, now we're going to jump over to your ovarian.
Oh, yes, let's do that.
Cancer update. Are you ready for that?
I'm ready.
Okay, this ovarian cancer is quite the soft killer, because I'll tell you, you don't know you have it.
No.
And why this topic today, and what are your current stats for ovarian cancer?
Well, ovarian cancer, this is for the ladies mainly, and it's for ladies
Jim.
As young as
it's not for men.
Post-pubertal. Yes, and even though the WOC people want you to believe that men can also have babies, they cannot have ovarian cancer. I'm sorry for all you workers out there, because they don't have ovaries. So let's get that straight.
And they don't have a uterus.
Yeah.
And, okay.
And they cannot have babies. I'm sorry.
Well, I think what they're going to do is probably implant a uterus in these men.
Oh yeah, they will.
And put the baby in
that
there.
It may happen.
And then count the months, and then go in there and do a C-section, and there you go.
Oh,
amen.
Boy.
Amen.
You know, but because he won't be able to bear down.
Their pelvis isn't big enough to deliver. I'm sorry.
Well, they don't have a vaginal vault. They have nothing.
Thank God for that.
I don't know. They can have one made.
Let's not go into that. We're going too far over
that
the line here.
That is too far. That
is.
LGBTQ is going to be picketing my clinic pretty soon if this keeps up. Okay, now here's the current stats. It affects over 20,000 women per year in the United States, and is severely underreported because many people have it, but it's never reported by their GYN doctor, the gynecologist, and it's often not reported by either medical oncologists, It's not seen much by radiation oncologists, but it is seen frequently by surgical oncologists that do primarily gynecology work. So, as you know, the tumor boards have faded out. Now, they're not as popular as they were when I first came to town. I ran tumor boards at all three hospitals at one time. And at the VA hospital as well, where I set up the cancer wards at all three hospitals, including was the only doctor taking care of cancers at the VA, and that's where I met my lovely wife. So thank God for that job, best job I ever had.
Amen.
And so it is the second most common estrogen-driven cancer. What do I mean by estrogen-driven? The patient's own estrogen, either when they're premenopausal, the estrogen from the ovaries, or postmenopausal, where the estrogen comes from their adrenal glands, that estrogen is harmful to them. It's like they're giving cancer its own fertilizer. So oftentimes there has to be blockers given for that with ovarian cancer, as they are for breast cancer, uterine cancer, cervical cancer, or primary peritoneal cancer. So it can occur anytime. From post-puberty, when the ovaries are active, or it can go as late as 80 or 90, but most commonly it affects women between the ages of the perimenopause, which are 45 to 55 years of age. So those are the statistics, but severely unreported. So the fact is we don't really know what the true number is yet.
Okay, why is ovarian cancer? I think I know this question. Why is ovarian cancer called a stealth cancer?
Stealth. That means
didn't
it's
I
hidden.
Say that?
Yeah.
Well, then why did you have to repeat it?
No, I just wanted to emphasize it because many women have it growing in them for months or years without really knowing it. They may just complain of some lower abdominal pain, some increase in their girth, their waist size increases unknowingly to them when they're not really gaining much weight. They don't really have an idea what happens. And the ovary that is forming cancer is dropping cancer cells into the peritoneal cavity because the ovaries have a very thin membrane because they pop out eggs at least once a month from either side. And those eggs normally drop into the fallopian tubules. And if they're fertilized, they will implant into the uterine cavity. So their normal menstrual period, you know, they have symptoms there. They have premenstrual symptoms. They have, they may or may not be pregnant. They may or may not have a miscarriage in the early pregnancy, so on. So they're not too worried when they have a little abdominal pain because it may be just part of a menstrual cycle, judged by either the family doctor or the gynecologist as just premenstrual tension or dysmenorrhea, D-Y-S.
Oh, it's better than
painful. Yes, yes, yes it is. All right, now the cancer on the ovary is releasing stem cells or circulating tumor cells into the blood as well as the peritoneal cavity, remember. And so when the cancer is first diagnosed in ovarian cancer, it may be further along than most cancers. It may have already implanted itself on the surfaces of the peritoneum, which are called the visceral and parietal surfaces. And these the cancer cells stick to these surfaces, and then they secrete fluid, and they impair the integrity of the peritoneal membranes and leak fluid like a dripping faucet, and that's why they get malignant ascites, which means their tummy fills up with fluid, which is malignant fluid. It may also go as far as going into the right chest cavity, and that is called malignant right pleural effusion. Not uncommon in first diagnosed ovarian cancer patients.
Yeah, that's a shame. You know, you gotta, watch the size of the abdominal.
Yeah, they're rarely in early stage for that reason, mm-hmm. Early. They mostly come in as a 3 or 4 stage cancer, and that means they're going to end up with the total hysterectomy and oophorectomy, salpingo oophorectomy, where they take the tubes, the ovaries, and the uterus, and they may take the omentum as well, which is the fatty layer or tip blanket that covers the bowel. And when the surgeon goes in there, he may be finding little granules the size of pea size or smaller attached to the peritoneal surface, which he'll try and scrape off. But it's impossible for, with his imperfect vision, to see the microscopic disease that he leaves behind. So surgery is only good for debulking. It's not meant to clean up the cancer completely.
No. Okay, what predisposal factors have been found to be responsible for promoting the growth of ovarian cancers?
Yes, there are several syndromes, ladies out there, that to maybe triggers for ovarian cancer. One is called the Lynch syndrome, which is a familial genetic disorder found on the female side of the family primarily, which involves a number of cancers that are all linked together genetically, and these include breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and colon cancer. Now, there doesn't seem to be any obvious connection between the three, but that's because the Lynch syndrome makes them that way. The other syndrome we see in women who have fertility problems is called PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. These women have problems with fertility. They often are in fertility clinics doing everything they can to have a fertile egg produced. They may have to go on drugs like progesterone or fertility pills. They may have to have the baby born in vitro. That means outside of the body. And then reimplant it when they are fertilized. So on. They have a lot of trouble, and many times these women develop cysts on both ovaries, and the cysts can evolve into, as I have a recent patient had this recently at 52 years, she had multiple cysts throughout her pelvis and was in pain. The original pathologist said, no malignant cells found. We did the Greek test, and yes, I'm sorry to say, malignant cells were found. So the Greek test did one up on the surgical biopsy, not making the surgeon or the pathologist too happy.
Wow. I want to thank you today, Dr. Forsyth and Erlene. Thank you so much for another great Health Matters. And looking,
we're finished? Are you cutting us off?
I know. You just
oh, my gosh, Eddie.
Right now. Hey, guess what? I still have some of the most wonderful text that came in. I want to thank Johnny and Rebecca in Mayport, Florida. I promise you I'll tell the doctor and Erlene what you said.
Okay.
This is Health Matters. Get a hold of Forsyth Cancer Care Center, 521 Hamel Lane, right here in Reno, Nevada, 775-827-0707.